Yeah, no, that's the thing is, it's no different than if I was playing football. If I decided to play college football, and if I wanted to, I doubt I was good enough to ever go pro, but if I did, don't let the media side of things distract you from the task at hand. Talk about mentors, not really mentors, but people idolize as, guys like Nick Saban or Bill Belichick, these great coaches of college football or NFL football, and they're real big on that. They're all about focusing on the job at hand, the task at hand, and not worrying about the outcome, because outcomes most times are distractions. You gotta focus on the process and what you're doing in a on a daily basis to succeed.
You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to The Ride, a podcast brought to you by Horse and Rider Magazine, hosted by Nicole Cherico and Emily Carey. This episode of The Ride is brought to you by Farnham and Endure Gold Killer Fly and Mosquito Control, a new fly spray for horses. Built for hard work, Endure Gold annihilates flies, ticks, and mosquitoes with brand new EPA-approved ingredients never before seen in equine care. Its powerful formulation delivers fast knockdown and up to 14 days of fly protection, helping keep horses comfortable in the barn, arena, or out on the trail. Add Endure Gold to your fly control arsenal. One spray, no mercy. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Ride. This is your host, Nicole Cherico, and today I am here with NRHA trainer Ben Beckett, who has competed at all of the major events, has won the Quarter Horse Congress several times, and recently just qualified for his first Run for a Million. So thank you, Ben, for coming and talking with us after such a busy week that you've had.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
So for those, our audience is not necessarily only reining people. So for those who may not follow the reining industry as closely, can you talk a little bit about yourself and how you first got involved with horses?
Sure thing. I come from a family of veterinarians, actually. My dad and grandpa were veterinarians. Going back, my grandpa was Dale Wilkinson's vet back in Findlay, Ohio. And growing up, I was surrounded by a lot of great horsemen and trainers, starting with like guys like Clark Bradley, Rick Weaver. Grew up in riding with the Dare family, so that was kind of my family background, at least.
So you pretty much, I mean, you're from Ohio, which is like the birthplace of reining. So like you, all those people that you just listed are like insanely important to the development of the reining industry. I'm a Midwest kid myself, so I grew up knowing those names as well. So it sounds like from the very beginning, reining was just kind of part of your DNA.
Yeah, 100%. My dad actually didn't really let me start in the reining horses, because I grew up in a lesson program with Linda Dare, who's Trevor Dare's mom. And I grew up with lesson horses, and my dad actually made me take English lessons growing up. And he said that I wasn't really able to start doing reining till I could ride a horse fairly decently.
So, I mean, this is, okay, I've talked to so many people who have come from different backgrounds and then they make their way into the reining. Do you find that having that background, that more classically trained horsemanship maybe background, kind of helped you prepare for an event this technical?
It's really hard to say. I mean, because the reining has become so specialized now, maybe if I was, brought up just riding reining horses and my family went out and bought me reining horses and, I grew up, Rick Weaver was my reining trainer growing up. And if they would have called Rick when I was probably 8 or 9 and said, hey, we want to get him started and we want him to really succeed at the reining, ideally probably that would have been the best route. But growing up for me, sports was a big deal for me. So it's not like I really had time to do that. That's where the lesson deal fit in good with me growing up, because I spent most of my time playing football, basketball, and I had to go to school. Looking back on it, I mean, and now being a professional and how we coach our youth kids, there's definitely different ways that I say my youth career or growing up could have been different, so that maybe I could have succeeded a little earlier. But then again, I mean, you can only play sports so long and be part of a team sport like that. So it's kind of hard to say.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's cool that you mentioned the sports. I've also talked to Matt Palmer a little bit about, you know, obviously he did a lot with baseball, and we talked a lot about the mentality that comes from one of those more team sports or just traditional sports versus the horses, and how he was able to kind of take that mental approach and transition it over to his riding.
Well, 100%, you know, with me playing football, and I played quarterback in high school, and, you know, that's a tough sport. You know, if you do your job wrong, you get ran over, you know, and, or if you don't do your job, you don't play, you know, where sometimes us riding horses, especially, you know, as youth kids, or if our parents go buy a horse, we can mess up. And our parents are saying, hey, just keep going, keep trying, you know, when you're playing a competitive sport, at least in our high school, is extremely competitive. If you didn't do your job, and either you, number one, you'd probably get hit pretty hard, or even if you did do your job, you'd probably still get hit hard, or you just didn't play. Or no different if you had a bad attitude. You know, if you had a bad attitude growing up, you just didn't play. Your coach wouldn't play you. So, you know, I wouldn't change my upbringing at all. It taught me great lessons. But yeah, no, sports is a, and I approach the horses and coaching just like I would a football program.
I love that. And you have a non-pro program. So do you find that you're taking some of those experiences that you had as a competitive athlete outside of riding and help them get the mental approach they need to be successful in the arena?
Absolutely. Some of my non-pros that never grew up playing sports don't sometimes understand it at first, but then they get to know in time, you know, what it's like. But yeah, no, I definitely approach it as I would if I was a football coach.
So going back to your reigning, when have you always known you were going to be a professional in this sport, or what was like the aha moment that you were like, I need to do this for a living?
Well, I would say that, you know, horses was always a love of mine, but I wouldn't say it was until maybe I was 14 or 15. I think that was the first summer my parents set me up to spend the summer with Rick Weaver. So as well as the lesson program that I did, my parents would lease me a horse from the University of Findlay for the summer, and I'd get to go show in the reining events. Now, I think when I was 14 or 15, that's the first year they sent me up with Rick, and I got to spend a summer with Rick Weaver, who's an NRHA Hall of Fame member and past fraternity champion and all that. But after spending a couple weeks with him and getting to live the life like a horse trainer would, it kind of was my, you know, light bulb moment that like, hey, I want to grow up and be like Rick Weaver. So that's when I would say I really had kind of in my mind said, this is what I want to do growing up.
And so obviously Rick has been a really big mentor of yours. Were there any other mentors that kind of helped you along the way as you transitioned from that non-pro youth kid to a professional?
Yeah. So the first person I went to go work for as a professional was Trevor there. And I knew Trevor growing up, and being a lesson kid, you know, all the way up till I was 18 or 19, you know, I didn't really know anything about training horses or how to ride 2-year-olds or any of those things, or even how a horse's brain truly operated. So I got to go work for Trevor for, I think, almost 4 years. And he was really important in teaching me how to be a horseman and how these horses' brains operate and how to ride 2-year-olds. So early on, Trevor was really instrumental in that, in allowing me to go work for him and do that. When it goes to other mentors, there's a long list of great mentors I have now that still help me. Guys like Lee Mancini or Brett Walters, or, you know, they're a lot older than me, but the years of wisdom that they have and, you know, taught me over the years has really been priceless.
And what about the riding programs have kind of helped you create your own training philosophy? What have you taken away from each of these experiences?
There's more than one ways to train a horse, you know, and each horse is different, and it's, you know, you never quit learning, and it's always a constant process and learning how to get these horses to operate at the highest ability that each horse can. So all those different guys have different ways of going about things, and a lot of times those guys have different ways about going on each horse. So, you know, being around all those guys and watching them and how they train on a daily basis, you know, kind of taught me that, you know, we're always learning.
Trevor too, again, another guy who did a lot of like athlete outside of the horses sports that kind of have that cool mental approach to the athlete.
I think Trevor was like an all-state wrestler.
He was, so
a little different than me. And now he put me in a headlock one time when I worked for him. And yeah, he was a really good wrestler, because I thought, you know, I was a lot bigger than Trevor. We were kind of fooling around. I was like, well, let me try wrestling you one day. And he put me like in a sleeper hold put me to sleep. So yeah, he's really good at wrestling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like totally sidetracked, but Trevor used to beat me in the horsemanship all the time when we were kids. And it makes me, I was just like, of course, he's so good at everything.
Yeah, well, try to beat Trevor at anything is hard.
I agree. Okay, so yeah, outside of those, you know, people that we just talked about, horses obviously are a big part of why you are doing what you're doing. Are there any horses that have stood out to you over your careers? It doesn't even have to be one that you won some major event with, but maybe one that taught you, you know, something along the way that's just totally changed the way that you approach stuff.
Well, the horse that I showed at the qualifier, you know, that's definitely one, you know, because that horse took me about 6 months of having him to really kind of figure him out and how he operates, because that horse is really such a good-minded horse, but the manner and how you ride him and prepare him is really important for how the horse is going to present himself, because that horse is so good-minded, he'll allow you to do all the training you want. But you got to be real careful that you don't overtrain and over prep him, because you're going to take away what he does best, if that makes sense. So Learning just to trust your horse and trust your training, and knowing when to leave him alone and say, hey, there's things that's going to look a lot better. And there's some things we're not going to like up there that we feel. But just knowing that the way that he presents himself in that manner is what's best for him.
And like, okay, so let's jump ahead for a couple of minutes, just because you've brought up this horse, Custom Made Whiskey. This is the horse that you qualified for the Run for a Million on this year. And mm-hmm. I believe in another interview I saw with you recently, he's also a non-pro horse, correct?
Yeah, we actually, so Rink Hewley purchased him, I think last year before the Futurity. A year before that, I'm sorry. So I showed him all last year. So then it would be 24 we bought him, right? End of 24. And his sole purpose really was just to be a limited non-pro horse. Now, sure enough, Rink wanted me to show him occasionally, but our plans really never got to be this big. But that horse just continued to improve and kind of proved to us that, hey, he could actually do this. So that's how we got to where we're at now.
That's pretty impressive, especially like we've kind of already touched on, like this has become such a specialized sport. It almost feels like you have to have a non-pro horse for the non-pro, an open horse for the open. You don't see a ton of crossover, especially at this level. How do you keep a horse that mentally ready when it has two probably very different riders competing?
Oh, the truth of it is, you know, that horse excels with a limited amount of pressure. And that's the thing, as professionals, when we go to a big event like the Quarter Horse Congress or the Run for a Million qualifier, whatever it may be, it's really easy as professionals to say, hey, this is a really important event. There's a lot of money up for grabs. And it's hard for us as trainers not to over prep or transfer that pressure that we feel over to that horse. And that's where that horse has been such a good non-pro horse, is because, you know, Rink won't ask him nearly as much as a professional would. And I learned that if you let him do his thing and keep the pressure down, because that horse tries so hard. He's a little bit like an NFL quarterback. You know, he's a guy that if you say, hey, we need to win the game, it's all on you, he's going to throw 6 touchdowns, but he might throw 3 or 4 interceptions. If you just say, hey, just go do your thing, he's a horse that's going to go throw 3 or 4 touchdowns every time. And then if you just can squeak by a couple more things, then he'll go throw 5 touchdowns, you know. But you just got to be careful, because if you ask him to try too hard, he'll just get in his own way and, you know, get in trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. And how old is he now?
8.
So you bought him not late in his career, but he's already been competing and everything, because you said you got him 2 years ago?
Yeah. So Joe Schmidt trained the horse, and I know he showed him as a 3 and 4 year old, and Joe actually had, I think Joe made a level 4 fraternity finals on him. And he was a really good horse for Joe. And then I think Jennifer Greenleaf bought him and showed him in the non-pro, and he was a good horse for her too. You know, and I would say that horse, you know, has just continued to get better in his career. You know, where some horses, you know, they get to a certain age and they kind of regress, where this horse is kind of keeps getting better and better.
Yeah, because like in the reining world, you know, the Derby events usually end around 7, I think 8 for some. Mm-hmm. And you kind of see those horses start to either go into retirement, breeding, you know, whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. So what's it like having one that's quote unquote, on the older side when you're competing in an event like the Run for a Million qualifier, where a lot of these people are riding horses that they've been mounted up on since their 3-year-old year?
Well, I think with the older horses, it's very much like a chess game, you know, and you have to find ways to counter their anticipation, you know, and even in their daily process of riding, you kind of need to find new ways to keep their brains fresh. And, you know, with that horse, you know, with me starting doing the working cow horse last year, you know, we started working them on cattle, started working the flag, kind of gave him some different jobs to do. And it kind of brought him a new desire to really want to do the reining, if that makes sense. Cause I think the monotony sometimes of those horses, they just get bored of doing their jobs, and then they just kind of look for ways to get out of that job. So when you go ahead and change that job up for them and create new ways for them to create desire, pretty much that could kind of revamp their brain and their career later on.
I love that. I actually really love the idea of taking one of the reiners and putting him on a cow or working him on the flag. And I imagine that it probably can help transition into the reining when it comes to, you know, like you're working on your flag. I would imagine that rollbacks could be, you know, it's helpful for stuff that you're doing.
Absolutely. You know, and it's funny because you say, you know, eight-year-old's kind of an old horse. You know, for us, an 8-year-old's really not that old. We have my fiance shows her old gelding that's 21 years old, and I think she was like a 219 on it in Florida. And I got like a 16-year-old mare that I've had for like 6 years that's still showing really good. So we got quite a few horses that are quite old and they're still quite successful. And I think that's kind of keeping those old horses going is kind of an art in itself. You know, and like I said, but finding new ways to keep their job fun and fresh is a way to keep the motor horses going. So for him, it was actually not real hard. You know, he just do that and we just keep going.
That's really cool. I love the idea of a horse in its 20s competing at such an impressive level. Yeah, obviously, as you said, your dad's a vet. So maintenance on some of these older guys probably isn't anything new for you. What else is the secret to success to keeping these guys so happy mentally and physically throughout their years?
Well, I'll be honest. Well, of course we do our regular maintenance, you know, but it's not like we've had to go out and inject these horses in every joint every year. We really haven't. I mean, outside of something routine maintenance like cocks or stifles, or I mean, I think even on her old horse, she might have did his coffins like a year ago, but it's not like we had to do a bunch of vet work on these horses. You know, I think it's really just the manner and how you ride them. Just like any athlete, right? Going back to the football thing, you know, if you ride a horse or you work a player on a team to the point of exhaustion, that's where injuries happen. So riding these horses to a point where their brains are still getting enough oxygen and they can breathe properly and you're not overworking them, I think that has to do probably the most important part about keeping these horses sound in an older age.
That's really cool. Cause like you always talk to people in this industry and old is always like 8, 9, 10 and which is crazy, right? Because that's really not that old. If you look at other sports like the dressage and the show jumping and everything, where like those horses are peaking in their teens. Yeah. And so it's really cool to hear that. Okay. So kind of going back to the Run for a Million qualifier and custom made whiskey, and this was your first time qualifying, and yeah, it was also the first time that this qualifying event has taken place at Bosque Ranch as like its own thing. What was that like?
Well, it's really a good thing it was in Weatherford this year, because I don't think Rink would have sent them all the way to Scottsdale if it was still there, honestly. Because Scottsdale, I mean, that's a long trip from us for Ohio, you know, and it moving to Weatherford, it made things a lot closer for us, a lot more manageable to make the trip. So, I probably wouldn't have gone if it was in Scottsdale, honestly, just because it was so far. So really happy it was in Weatherford this year.
It's so true though. Like, yeah, it's when you're traveling from, and again, I've talked to Matt Palmer about these same, you know, struggles where you're living on the East Coast or Ohio or, you know, and these major events are taking place in Arizona. It's not only like you're missing out on so many extra days that you could be training your horses at home, but it's a load on the horses that are going to these shows. And yeah, so I would imagine that going to Texas was a lot easier than going to Scottsdale.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it, obviously this was kind of a cool event because it was literally just like one and done. Like there were no other events. You guys were all there for the same reason. And so what was that kind of like mentally preparing? Because did you just bring the one horse or did you have several?
I just brought the one horse. So, yeah.
That's even more intense, as Taylor Sheridan likes to say, you only had one bullet, whereas some of these other guys are showing three horses and have three different opportunities to get qualified. What was your mental approach kind of going into it, knowing you just had that one shot?
I guess when you kind of say it like that, it makes it sound like there's a little bit more pressure on me with just having the one horse. But that's the thing, is you just got to watch. I mean, you got to watch that whatever pressure you're feeling, you don't transfer that over to that horse. You know, that to truthfully, for that horse going to that show, outside of the trip getting there, you know, he actually had a really easy week. You know, I really didn't have to push on him all that hard because it was pretty common what we did going there, you know, and him only having to get shown one time. That's actually a pretty easy trip because, like I said, he was a non-pro horse. There was trips where he went to horse shows and he got showed three times, you know, so. You know, we've shown that horse enough and I've been around him long enough. You know, I went to that horse show thinking that was just another horse show. I didn't try to think of it like it was this $500,000 event.
Yeah.
Cause what we do on a daily basis or what we've done in the past year, even at local shows, has been to a really good level. So, the NRHA maneuver standard doesn't change. So just go do our thing.
I love that. And obviously, this is such a public event. It's surrounded by, you have the cameras, the TV appearances, the autograph signings. Those things don't necessarily happen at other major events, which could be like totally just like, I don't know, like, I don't know if curveball is the right word, but like it totally changes the way that this whole horse show operates. Have you spoken to other riders? I mean, obviously you and Trevor are probably close. Trevor qualified at the event as well. Have you talked to any of the riders yet about how to prepare for this type of event? Is there anything that you're looking forward to that doesn't necessarily happen at any other than major events?
Yeah, I actually haven't talked to anyone about it. You know, am I super excited that there's going to be a bunch of cameras there and I have to talk and do all those things? Probably not. You know, if it was up to me, I'd probably just show up and ride my horse and go home. My dad is actually really good at public relations, believe it or not. He's a great public speaker, so I'll make sure he's around and he can kind of lead me in the right direction when I got to do these things. But that's a different ball game now with the TV and all these interviews and everything. But like I said, just try your best and do your thing.
Focus on what your horse is doing and telling you and let everything else kind of get in the background.
Yeah, no, that's the thing is, you know, it's no different than if I was playing football. You know, if I decided to play college football and if I wanted to, you know, I doubt I was good enough to ever go pro. But if I did, you know, don't let the media side of things distract you from the task at hand.
Yeah, definitely. So
some of my, you know, talk about mentors, not really mentors, but, you know, people idolize is, you know, guys like Nick Saban or Bill Belichick, you know, these great coaches of college football or NFL football, you know, and they're real big on that. You know, they're all about focusing on the job at hand, the task at hand, and, you know, not worrying about the outcome, you know, because outcomes most times are distractions. You gotta focus on the process and what you're doing on a daily basis to succeed.
So kind of going from that, let's transition to your non-pros. What are you telling them when they get to a really big horse show like this, maybe for the first time? How are you setting them up for success? Because obviously I'm not a horse trainer, but I would assume that setting the horse up for success is the easy part. It's coaching the non-pros so that they don't get in their own head.
Yeah, 100%. You know, and I think that one of those things we do trying to prepare our non-pros is put them in tough situations at home. You know, as you go to horse shows and there's a lot of external things that could be distractions, you know, and it's hard for non-professionals that don't ride every day to get caught up in those things. And, you know, we try to do it at home where I give them certain drills that puts them in a position just like they're showing, and they have to be in position right now and they don't have 10 tries to get it right. Because as you know, when you go horse show, you don't get a mulligan. You can't walk up there, you know, whack a golf ball into the trees and say mulligan and have another shot. You know, you only get one shot. So you got to learn to do things right the first time. And, you know, when my non-pros come and ride, that's what we expect. You know, you can't sit here and practice. You got to learn to do it right the first time, so that horse has a chance to succeed in doing so. So will you.
Man, I wish there were mulligans in the horse industry.
Trust me, I wish too.
That sounds lovely. Yeah. All right. Well, besides the Run for a Million, what other events are you guys looking forward to attending this year? Any ones that you're super excited about besides, I mean, obviously Vegas is going to be a huge highlight, but.
My fiance is going to the NRBC. I'm staying home and riding horses. I'll fly out there later in the week, but I think she's got some really nice horses to go show out there, and she's eligible for all the levels. So I'm pretty excited for her to go show out there. And, we have that coming up. Let's see. We have to go to a bunch of horse shows here in May and June, but most of them are just all local, but we'll be running around quite a bit. But, I'd say right now, I'm just trying to focus on the next one coming up for us would be the NRBC.
Nice. And you don't have to be there the whole time. Even better.
Exactly. Exactly.
Awesome. Well, for those who want to learn more or follow you guys along on social media, especially during this really exciting year for you, how can they follow you guys?
Imagine if you just Google Beckett Performance Horses. My fiance handles all the media stuff. So I guess you can Google it, or you can look us up on Facebook or Instagram. That would be my guess. But Beckett Performance Horses would probably be the easiest way to find us.
Perfect. Awesome. Well, thank you for taking time and talking with us today.
Oh, yeah. No problem. Thank you.
This episode of The Ride is brought to you by Farnam and Endure Gold Killer Fly Mosquito Control, a new fly spray for horses. Thank you guys for tuning into The Ride podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and please be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow Horse and Rider Magazine on social media and find us at horseandrider.com to see all the cool things that we're up to. And if you have any comments or questions, please be sure to hit us up at horseandrider@equinenetwork.com. We want to hear from you guys. And if you like what you're listening to, please be sure to leave us a review on iTunes.